Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Whoa, what a world, what a world. But we're gathering now. We're gathering now as we do, and we are in pledge drive to keep this station, this show, alive. The image for the sun today is pilgrims, well, we could change that word, gather around a campfire, shared pursuits that draw people together, journeying towards a common goal, seeing that each person is a piece of the whole, as in the Canterbury Tales. Right, and the sun quintiles Jupiter. Everyone here, everyone listening, is a storyteller. And as Scheherazade reminds us, people need stories even more than they need bread. So here we are, storytelling central, and everyone who's listening, sun quintile Jupiter, which is storytelling's blessings, abundance, and wealth. There we go. So we're pledging to storytelling, truthful storytelling out there in the world. And the quintile, just as a thank you, a telepathic gift, the quintile bestows irresistible eloquence on all who are listening now and raise their hands. Oh, do you get it? And even more, call 1-800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. We're featuring this hour, Separation of Church and Hate. It's really great. We're going to play clips from last week's radio show with John Fugelsang and clips from him. That's for a pledge of $150. Can't recommend it highly enough. So we're going to have a very short clip of John Fugelsang and then bring in our wonderful short guest, Barry Spector, to give us some relief through Rumi. Okay, so here's our first clip. It is John Fugelsang. Here we go.
Jesus is very specific about how we're supposed to treat all people. You're supposed to treat gay people the same way you treat him. But they don't like Jesus, too woke, so they go to Leviticus. The same people who deny his Judaism fall back on Hebrew scriptures. But Leviticus 20:10 commands us to stone adulterers to death. So if you're going to use Leviticus against the gays, you better start collecting some rocks for Donald Trump, and I'll let the Secret Service know you're coming. They don't follow it, Andy. They don't believe this book. They don't believe the passages they weaponize to hurt people.
Yeah, well, that's a short clip from more soon coming from John Fugelsang from our show last week and our honoring as a thank you gift the book Separation of Church and Hate for a pledge of $150. And as he skillfully guides us, John Fugelsang, and Jesus skillfully guide us. Don't argue with evangelicals and right-wingers. Make them argue with Jesus and be prepared. And so I'm going to bring in briefly our great ally, Barry Spector, to tell us about, again, Rumi's caravan returns to Berkeley. And because I was delinquent and not picking up your email, we're not offering tickets, but we're telling people about it because it's such a worthy event. Welcome, Barry.
Hello, Caroline. I'm here with my wife, Maya, who is the real poet in this family.
Ah, splendid. So, you know, what a time. We want solace and beauty and to be reminded of good teachings. We'll be doing that with John Fugelsang's book, Separation of Church and Hate, Good Values, Welcome the Stranger. So, yeah, I have your promo for the event, Rumi's Caravan Returns to Berkeley, Sunday, September 28th, 7:30 to 9:30 at The Freight on 2020 Addison Street, Berkeley. And because I was delinquent and not checking my KPFA email, we all aspire to be better people. We are not at this time offering tickets as a pledge incentive, but we do want to let people know. So both of you, because the proceeds from the performance go to Middle East Children's Alliance, right?
That's correct. They've been doing really stellar work in Palestine for over 35 years, and they have lost many, many friends and relatives in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it is the moral issue of our time. There's so much, but that is such a huge thing. Yeah, and then I see, you know, Maya, if you want to chime in, we just have a little short moment, but I want to let people know of this worthy event, and we will do more of something in the future. But is there anything you want to say, Maya, about this particular event and the value of Rumi and Mary Oliver and Seamus Heaney and Antonio Machado. Is there anything you'd like to let us know about their contribution to our goodness now?
Well, what we'd like to think of the caravan is doing is of helping restore the soul of the world through reinvigorating the oral tradition. And so all the poems we offer in a kind of poetic conversation. It's not scripted. All of us on stage carry a bunch of poems, and we have fabulous musicians who accompany us. And what we find is just such good soul nourishment to be together, to gather, be in community, and listen to the heartfelt and moving words of the greatest poets of all time and all places.
Yeah, no, that's such a solace and a salve to us all now, and perfect that you put it that way, helping restore the soul of the world. May that be all of our deepest dedication, and the dedication of the station and this show.
Can I also say a couple of things? So this
please.
Is a conversation. We have no idea which poems we're going to tell. And the way it works is one person will tell a poem on a particular subject by a particular poet, and that will inspire one of the rest of us to tell a poem that may be by the same poet or maybe on the same subject or the same feeling. So it becomes this thing that just swirls around us as the spirit just picks up. And we find that listening in this way as the audience, it's much easier to feel the essence of the poem when it's being recited by heart by somebody who took the trouble to really work with it and have it work us.
That's beautiful, right? The oral tradition, memorizing things is wonderful. We want all these skills, and as you're doing, as both of you are doing, you know, it's like the quote, to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. And then we include wolves and everybody too, but especially now, and that's really what you're both doing.
Well, we've been on this path for over 25 years, and the last several we have been at the Freight in Berkeley, and grateful to the Freight for having us. It's a wonderful venue, and we'd love to see lots of folks in the East Bay and beyond showing up on Sunday night.
Definitely. No, I concur. Yes, the last Bioneers gig that I did was at the Freight maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. But it is wonderful. So a shout out to, yeah, well, this, we want to keep, you know, vast news alive and micro news. And this is an important event in the Bay Area. And the Freight is a wonderful thing. And what you're both doing is a wonderful thing. As our buddy ancestor now, Robert Bly, says, bring in the poets and double the madness. And
Yes.
We want to do that, and it's part of our spiraling out of polarity. I think it's just for fun, you know. As people go, yes, wonderful use of the word conversation, because of course, conversing means turning with, right? So we're all in a giant conversing. We're all turning together, which is very Sufi spiraling. Yes, and reminding us to spiral out of polarity and expand our repertoire of responses. So I like to think of the feast that you're both offering with many collaborators and musicians on Sunday, September 28th, 7:30 at the Freight, is you know, for everybody to fill magic backpacks. You know, it's like Martine Prechtel, a friend of show, used to say a love drive-by, which is where you run up to somebody and you give them a poem and some chocolate and keep going, right? So, so
we've tried
you're,
that.
I'm sorry.
We have tried that.
Yeah, no, I think that. we want these things. We want the counteracting to the hate, you know, and even to you know, we aspire to leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways. We don't count on it, but even, you know, a Rumi poem to hand out to the ICE agents going, here, you might consider changing your career to a poet. Here's a Rumi line.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you knew a Berkeley character, Captain Cod, who was a homeless, wise person, quoter of Rumi, a friend of show, ancestor now. But he's the one who taught me Rumi, saying, stop, be still, and listen, because you're drunk and we're at the edge of the roof. Right.
That's
so,
right.
And, yeah. And I actually gave that to Robert. And then Robert said it on the air with Bill Moyers about what he'd like to say to Bush about the war, and Bill Moyers edited it out. It's like, oh, everybody's befoibled. But is there anything, I'm going to go back to dedicated pitching. You can encourage people to pledge to KPFA in the show, going, yes, Rumi support, a Rumi endorsement. That would be good. Naomi Shehab Nye, friend of show, Robert Bly was hosted on this show many times. Always quote, you know. Well, there we go. But is there any nutrient rich favorite quote or words both of you, either one of you, whichever one first, wants to say to us now, and then we will be cahooting further. But yeah.
How about a very short Rumi quatrain?
Yes.
Come to the orchard in spring. There'll be light and wine and lovers among the pomegranate flowers. If you do not come, these do not matter. If you come, these do not matter.
And one more.
Yeah.
I've been living on the lip of insanity, wanting to know reasons, knocking on a door. It opens. I've been knocking from the inside.
So, do that one again so we can savor it. Would you do that?
I've been living on the lip of insanity, wanting to know reasons. Knocking on a door, it opens. I've been knocking from the inside.
That's good. I think that's the Rumi news for now, right? Again, we want many kinds of news. The Jungian news, you know, phallic narcissism rose 800% the day. We want the Rumi news, the poet news. We want to spiral this in. So, well, I look forward to cahooting with both of you more in the fullness of time. Thank you for your beautiful dedication that inspires our dedication.
My pleasure.
My pleasure, absolutely. And then again, that will be a beautiful replenishing event. You know, Rumi's caravan returns to Berkeley Sunday, September 28th at 7:30 at the Freight, and all of the proceeds for that performance go to the Middle East Children's Alliance, a most worthy thing. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Maya and Barry.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yes, absolutely, definitely. Thank you so much. Well, we want replenishing. We want replenishing. And so in this station, let me just say about what's humming in the air. Again, astrology requires no belief, just let it wash over you and see if it resonates, you know. But what's available, we say magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything, not condone, but to spiral. And so I love the image of the sun's degree, which I read before, which is gathering around a campfire, everyone a storyteller. And as I said, sun quintiles Jupiter. We live in a storytelling creation. Everything's telling us its story all the time by its shape and its color and its song and its rhythm. And if we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be okay as a species. So just put informed, reverent curiosity, you know, after your first name, before your second name. Just fill in that as part of our dedication. This is a time of deep dedication. Whoa. So it is deft, if I do say so, to be replaying some of the cahooting I did with John Fugelsang last week, and referencing his book, Separation of Church and Hate, is so good, for a pledge of $150 by calling 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. So it's super worthy. And again, part of the strategy, it's a handbook. All of us, part of us as effective storytellers, you know, and our task right now as we're in Act 4, where Evola seems to be winning, is to craft the story of Act 5. You know, fortunately, we don't need to know how, but we do want to dedicate to what, and then trickster magic steps in. And this book and John Fugelsang's dedicated work, you know, really contribute to that as a handbook, because part of our great skill, a wonderful friend taught me this years ago, to spiral out of polarity, nobody minds being asked, did you know? Unless we ask it in a snarky way, unless we haven't used our harumphitude composter, right? Communication only possible once we've composted our harumphitude. But did you know? It's the practice of did you know? And everyone here, everyone listening, all citizen, trickster, allies, you know, did you know it's good to have a magic backpack full of did you know about this? Did you know what's really in Leviticus? Well, here comes our next clip with John Fugelsang, full of things you can collect with did you know? Here we go.
What a great pleasure. You had me with being mounted by a frog. Thank you.
Yes, no, it's a great thing. Again, here we are with everything, with one tongue shared between everything. So that's great. Anyway, so yeah. Thank you so much for our tag and for your being such a good sport. Because it was after I heard your interview with Andy Borowitz, I'm like, this is it for now. Because I was rummaging through all of the, as I said, you know, all the, you know, Charlie Kirk and the Groper things, and it's like, no. This is it. Your fabulous book, the title, your capacity to express complex things in vernacular accessibility. So wherever it's a democratic show. You can go wherever you want at any time, of course.
Right on.
But and I've been listening. The actual book arrived just now, and I go, oh, it's so good. Every chapter is an outline and a strategy. And listening, also, I want to give a pitch to the Audible, which is your voice, and it's riveting. It's riveting. So it's been a companion, and we are offering the book next week as our pledge drive. But anyway, so that's fabulous.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm wildly enthused. Absolutely. So, yeah, because, you know, we do have the metaphor of the eclipse and the cauldron. And, you know, what do we want to toss into the cauldron? And how about addiction to having an enemy? Should we throw that into the cauldron?
Addiction to what?
To having an enemy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I say in the book early on, if your church is not telling you to love your enemies, but your church is telling you who your enemies are, you're not really in a church. And, you know, that's the whole basis of it. I think the whole history of Christianity has been, you know, Christians versus the people who actually follow Christ. More and more, as I performed and broadcast around the country, I always hear how the top religion, the most fastest growing religion in our country, is Mormonism, or some say Islam, some say none of the above. But over the years, I've come to really believe the largest growing spiritual demographic in our country are people who were raised religious, but now consider themselves spiritual, because they're turned off to all the cruelties and hypocrisies that we've witnessed from the fundamentalist and Christian nationalism in organized religion. And I wrote this book because I grew up believing Christianity was about love and service and putting others before yourself and helping the least of these, all the things Christ talked about, welcoming the stranger. Individuals and nations should care for the poor, care for the sick. And millions of us grew up in the 80s and 90s to find that religion of love and peace was seemingly hijacked by this right-wing, white supremacist, tax-free, mean little clique run by these ex-segregationists and televangelists. And they wound up settling 5 years after Roe v. Wade, which wasn't controversial. It took 5 years before Falwell ever mentioned abortion in a sermon. But once they realized that Roe v. Wade would be their magic ticket to unite the right wing that was sort of lost at sea after they lost on civil rights and voting rights and Nixon, we've seen what's happened. I mean, for the last 45 years, criminalizing abortion and being mean to gay people have become synonymous with Christianity. if you tell people you're Christian, 9 times out of 10, they'll believe you despise gay people and think that the government should force citizens to be pregnant against their will. The problem is that Jesus never comes out against abortion, never comes out against gay people. In fact, Jesus commands us to treat gay people and women who've had abortions exactly the way we treat him. So my mom was a nun for 16 years. My father was a Franciscan brother. I had a weird, abnormally Catholic childhood. And I wrote this book for any believer and any atheist who's going to have to deal with a Christian nationalist in their family or their workplace or their government.
Yeah, no, I love that you dedicate the book to your mother, father, known as Peggy and Jack, also known as Sister Damien and Brother Boniface. So you really had an assignment.
Oh yes, very much. I worked on this book for a long time, and my first draft of it, the first pitch I ever sent in as a book proposal was 15 years ago when my father was in hospice, and my father actually hit send on the email for the first ever submission of a book proposal for this idea. That was 15 years ago this summer. And yesterday, the book in its first week of release made the New York Times bestseller list. So,
of course.
It was very very bittersweet for my parents. But yeah, I wrote this because I believe in the Christianity they raised me in, one of love and forgiveness and service to others.
Well, I actually had a moment. It's pretty early on because I'm playing with dolls in my dollhouse, and I'm going over the Nicene Creed, the one God, the only God, the only church. And I'm going, no.
Well, one creed to rule them all, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going, absolutely not. I did hang in to get confirmed, and I just picked the martyr who won. I figured it was a kind of kinky, erotic, sadomasochistic cult, and so I picked, Agatha, right, Agatha. Anyway, yes, and then I have a wonderful colleague I collaborate with often, Patricia Ewing, who's a political activist and strategist, but also loves Christianity, and she's called it liberating Christianity, meaning finding that which is liberating in it and setting it free, which is what you're doing, right?
Exactly.
You're tracking it back.
I'm not a theologian or clergy. I mean, you're talking about really, truly good people who walk the walk. I am just a vulgar comedian who has learned the joys of mocking hypocrites, because Jesus showed me the way, and you'll be surprised at how good it feels. And I also find that when you're dealing with these people, if there are loved ones, then, hate doesn't work, and calling them superstitious bigots doesn't work. But I find that sometimes, whether you're a believer or an atheist, if these people are in your family, we got to live with them. And I find sometimes if you engage them on what the Bible actually says, it can be pretty funny. They won't agree with you, but they might take the time. They might appreciate you took the time to actually engage them on what the scripture says. If you just know a few things about a few different issues and what Jesus says, you could really have these conversations without hate. And I've come to find that you'll get a lot farther showing your racist uncle that Jesus was not an immigrant-hating homophobe than if you just dismiss your uncle and call him an immigrant-hating homophobe. He'll just assume you're on the side of Satan then. We got to be the good guys. And the good news is, if you're debating a right-wing Christian on any of the subjects that divide us, chances are, even if you're an atheist, Jesus is on your side.
Yeah, no, we want to bring in all that's been excluded and all that, some of us might have known, but you lay it out so clearly. And again, with such a deft, jaunty tone, really, really great. Because St. Bridget was also renowned for performing the miracle of abortion on one of the nuns.
Right.
And the whole abortion thing. I forgot which, you will know, which council, the council decided that, abortion is okay until quickening, which is when you
That's
can
right.
feel the child kick. And what council was that where they determined that?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up in my book or in
right. Okay. Yeah, that's right. No, your book.
But that's the point. Back when Roe was decided, the Southern Baptist Convention voted to affirm abortion rights the year before Roe v. Wade and the year after Roe v. Wade. Jerry Falwell never mentioned abortion in any sermon until 5 years later. In the 1970s, the right-wing Christians were segregationists. Jerry Falwell opened whites-only schools and defended apartheid. And their big issue in the 70s was that Jimmy Carter was threatening the tax-exempt status of colleges and universities that still practiced racial segregation. Ronald Reagan talked about Jimmy Carter's meddling IRS more in the 1980 campaign than he talked about abortion. Their whole thing was that, you know, Jimmy Carter threatened to take tax-exempt status away from the Mormons if they wouldn't let black men hold the priesthood, and he was going after the universities because that's what a Christian would do. Say you don't get to call yourself Christian and practice racial discrimination and expect to get special treatment from a society based on secular values and equality. They ran defending racism, and it wasn't selling too well. It didn't help them too much. So by the early 80s, they recognized abortion was going to be their golden ticket. And as a consequence, we've had two generations of Christians in this country who've been raised to vote against everything Jesus ever talked about by talking about abortion, which Jesus never talked about.
No, that's so that's so crucial because your book is a handbook for one of the things that's distilled and that you say with everywhere in the book and also with Andy Borowitz is don't argue. Make others argue with Jesus. And it's like
that's the way to do
genius,
it.
Deft, spiral out of the polarity, and nobody really minds being asked, did you know? Unless we ask it in a snarky way. Did you know? No, I didn't know that. Or that's interesting. So let's go over
when they're trying to call the Christian refugees at our border illegals. I just say God commands the Hebrews in the Old Testament to welcome the stranger, treat the alien as one of your own. Jesus goes a step further and says individuals and nations will be judged by how they welcome the stranger in Matthew 25. So please tell me, whoever you're arguing with, why should I listen to you and Donald Trump and reject God and Jesus? Ask them. You don't have to fight them. Make them argue with God. Make them argue with Jesus. Make them argue with this book they wave around so bombastically.
That's so great. This is Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show, and we are all here. We are all storytellers. And remember, the sun, quintile Jupiter, describes everyone listening right now as having the capacity for irresistible eloquence in creating the all-inclusive, irresistible story of, like, here's what we can do. Alan Watts said a couple of great things. No sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. So we do, may evil contain the seeds of its own demise, and collapse. But meanwhile, we are aware of danger. And this book, this wonderful book, separation of church and hate is useful that way. Alan Watts also said the problem with Western humans and Christianity is they suck the finger instead of going where it pointed. And we go, that's good too. So here we are. Thanks to Cameron in Oakland. You've put us on the board. Bless your heart. That's really wonderful. We're magnetizing everybody who pledges gets irresistible eloquence. I mean, you get it anyway, but you get even more irresistible eloquence on behalf of what you love to be a cultural agent on behalf of what you love and are in nature. There we go. And the quintile is also opening portals between worlds. So Jupiter is storytelling, blessings, and wealth. Our definition of wealth. So we're really magnetizing the team to pledge. You can have the book, Separation of Church and Hate, for a pledge of $150, but any amount, surprisingly large or churlishly small, is completely welcome. It's all magic. It's all we're convening our community. We're building our craft, our sturdy craft. Craft means power and dedication and vessel. In all languages means container and boat. So we're crafting our vessel of dedication. Think of KPFA that way. Think of the Visionary Activist Show that way. Think of your own life that way. We're crafting our vessel. We dedicate, and then we hoist our winds, our sails of willingness, catch the wind's hand on the tiller, steady direction. That's part of the dynamic. So do call 1-800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. It would be so heartening. Again, join Cameron and some other mysterious person So, that's great. Yes, Anonymous in Forestville. I have to miss most of today's show, but woman, I want my chance to donate. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's adorable. Love Caroline Casey's Visionary Activist Show. Yeah, well, we're all visionary activists, or however we choose to self-moniker. Let's go now, because it's John Fugelson is riveting. We all got to know about the kidnapping of Christianity by Paul, right? And as Pat Ewing says, Paul is like Karl Rove. Okay, so here's part two of our conversation with John Fugelsang and the wonderful book, Separation of Church and Hate, that you can have for a pledge of $150 by calling 800-439-5732, kpfa.org. It would be so wonderful. Here we go. I was lucky enough some years back to spend time with Bedouins in Syria, and the Bedouin response, you know, we knocked on a stranger's door. You know, and my friend Deborah, who lives there, said, no, we can do that. And I was like, really? No other Westerners, no cars around. And the woman opens it and goes, oh, strangers, how wonderful. Right? And their approach is, you must have traveled so far. You must have so many stories. They must be the stories we need. Please come in. You know, and it's like, yes, more like that. That's really good.
Has a choice on how we're going to be. Are you going to be a no room at the inn, or are you going to be a welcome the stranger Christian?
Yes. And then take us to Paul and how Paul kidnapped Christianity, and so many people who reference Christianity are really referencing Paul. This is really important for everyone.
Well, your listeners know this much better than most people, and better than me. When I set out to write this book, I never planned on writing a whole chapter about Paul. I never thought I'd have to do that. But I realized if I'm going to talk about what Christianity started out as and what it turned into, you have to mention Paul. Because he, you know, for everything, better or worse, he's responsible for what Christianity is now. You know, there was only about 20 people preaching Jesus' message after he died, right? And the apostles were all getting murdered by guys like Paul. When he was still Saul of Tarsus, he was present at the martyring of St. Stephen. He was all down for murdering the apostles, and he liked to hunt Christians down. He was like a bounty hunter who would have done the work for free. And he was so good at it, they sent him out to other cities, because Paul, still Saul, was both a Pharisee and a Roman citizen, which means he could travel around the Roman Empire much more freely, say, than a lot of Jesus' apostles. So when Paul had his conversion moment and became Paul, he was able to preach to the Gentiles and bring Jesus' message all around the empire. And he was able to do it and have his version stick because his old buddies were still killing all of Jesus' old pals back home. So Paul's version lasted. Paul's version is what the Roman Empire took and ran with. And Paul poured all of his hangups into the work, his hangups about women. Jesus was an incredible feminist. Paul was not. Jesus was not a homophobe at all. Paul kind of was. Paul got grossed out by guys hooking up with guys in Roman pagan temple rituals. So Paul pours all that into the work. And Paul probably had no idea that one day his letters would be used by homophobes and bigots who wanted to pretend that Jesus agreed with their homophobia. 300 years after he's dead, you know, Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said, all scripture is God-breathed. He's talking about the Hebrew scriptures, and he's saying it, all the prophets, it all comes from God. All scripture is God-breathed. When he wrote that to Timothy, he wasn't referring to his letter to Timothy. He was talking about the Hebrew scriptures, not what I'm writing here, but he was writing letters about how the scripture is God-breathed. 300 years after he's dead, the Roman Empire takes over. They decide in the Council of Nicaea that Paul's letters our Holy Scripture. They're going to be in the New Testament. This is when they created the canon. So suddenly Paul's letters about Holy Scripture are considered Holy Scripture. Suddenly Paul's writings about God are now quoted by guys who assume that Paul gets to speak for God. Suddenly the homophobes who have to go to the Old Testament because Jesus won't satisfy their prejudice, well, they have somewhere else in the New Testament they can go as well. And to this day, when you ask a right-winger to say, where does Jesus back up your homophobia, they'll quote Leviticus, maybe Deuteronomy. They'll quote a lot of Paul, but they'll never quote Jesus. And Paul's choices led directly to everything good about Christianity, and they led to the Crusades, They led to the Spanish Inquisition. They led to the Holocaust. And they led to the Donald Trump Bible. Everything good and bad came from Paul. All about the hierarchy, not so much the homeless Jewish carpenter.
Yeah, I love, I still have affection for Reverend Ike, the prosperity minister, popular in the 80s. You know? But but he said, Brother Paul, some woman must have done him a deal because he was way out of line with women, right? Women should not be speaking, they should not.
He's so out of line with women, so sexist. Jesus is a huge feminist. Paul is not. But then in other parts, you know, Paul talks about like Phoebe, who's a deacon in the church. So in one letter, he's saying that women can't speak in a church and must always be subservient to men. In another letter, he's talking about how Phoebe's a deacon and how this other woman saved his life and this other woman's financing his ministry. So what gives? Was Paul like writing different things to different audiences, or more likely, have these letters been rewritten so many times over the years, we're not really sure what was meant in the first place? Either way, it doesn't matter because Paul's not Jesus. And if someone's quoting Jesus, if someone's quoting Paul to get around Jesus, then they're a Paulist. They're not a Christian.
Right. Right. And it's also a smidge like almost Pope Valentinius that my friend Pat taught me about too, which was he was almost Pope. And almost Pope Valentinius was like equal men and women, equal you're a layperson, then you're clergy next week, then you rotate around, and this idea of original sin, what a silly idea. And he's almost Pope, right? But the fathers get together, and they're so insane that they spend the next two centuries refuting Valentinius, after whom we name Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day is meant to be about equal. So yeah, the women and equality, and Paul as a pro-empire guy. Yeah, but again, complex, as you say. And so so there's Paul, well,
and
there's Leviticus.
And so complex that Paul was ultimately killed by the Roman Empire. Eventually his luck ran out, and being a Roman citizen was not enough to save him.
Yes. Right. So there's it's kind of like a Carl Hiaasen novel where people meet their fate in some horrible but weirdly satisfying way. It's sort of like, you know, boomerang. May anything go back to its source with a pie in the face. So, Paul, well, we're sorry. We celebrate no death. We celebrate no death now or ever of any kind. Everything a unique experiment. And I guess Paul shows that you can change, sort of. You know, I mean, from being an ICE agent,
exactly. You
know, or what. You know, into a leader, and then, you know, no women, but yes, women. So it's kind of part of our strategy to aspire to leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways, not counting on it.
Look at how many people have talked their parents and grandparents out of so much un-Jesus-like homophobia in the last 30 years. We've seen it. We've witnessed us getting more decent as a culture.
Yes. It's interesting. I have so many friends born in the 90s, the mid-90s. Again, practical, idealistic people with high levels of tolerance, these people that I grew up watching the whole time from zero to here. And yet the Charlie Kirks and the Fuentes, you know, they're born then too. So yeah. they also... I mean, because what my wonderful ally says is, you know, all of her friends are, you know, highly tolerant and all of that quality of that generation, except for, the yearning to be part of a community in which the cult is the toxic mimic of the thing. So it's quirky there. But the real invitation, which your book is kind of like a humming and accessible and very witty, and it's true. I can't wait to get back to the Audible, and now I have the book, and I'm going to spend all next week
so
touting
kind.
It, even without you. I think it really is essential. As I kept saying, oh, do come here, because it's so. Now, well, it's on the New York Times bestseller list, which is a very positive augury, right? I mean, it's sort of like Josh Johnson.
Considering that we had no major media appearances, no TV appearances the week of the release. So for me, the fact that we were able to get New York Times bestseller list just on the virtue of independent and progressive media, it tells me that there is a massive audience of people who were raised Christian and are really alienated from this meanness that passes for Christianity today.
Yeah. No, I view it as a good augury, and also a good augury. I don't know if you know the comedian Josh Johnson. Yes, probably you do.
Yes. Right.
But he's wildly popular, and he's very relaxed and tolerant, and a long, relaxed storytelling, and people love it. And he takes the personal thing, and then halfway through, he ties it to a big collective thing. It's like, that's a good augury, too, that somebody like this gentle, you know, again, what you're saying about the teachings of Jesus and Josh Johnson and yourself, strong enough to be gentle, is really... Yeah.
Well, he's stronger than me because I'm gentle in the book. I'm not as gentle as I'd like to be on stage. But Josh certainly does have a really. Oh, I'm much more George Carlin than Bodhisattva. Yes.
Oh, well, that's no Bodhisattva Coyote. That's great. No Bodhisattva Coyote. We want a little spice because we don't want to be nice, because nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant. But we do want to be kind-hearted, right? I mean, Are you kind-hearted in your spicy, sharp-tongued self on stage?
I do hope to be, and I try to only direct... The only targets I ever take on are people in power and mean people. I don't ever go after people who are suckers or who have been led astray unless they're mean. That's it. People in power, I'm not into punching down. You know, Jesus' whole ministry was about taking the people at the lowest parts of the totem pole and raising them up, the lepers, the prostitutes, the despised foreign minority like the Samaritans. This administration's whole gig is beating up on the marginalized, the immigrants, the refugee, the transgender kid, the trans soldier who wants to serve the country. It's all punching down. And punching down does not work in comedy or Christianity.
No, it's an abdication of the role of the sacred trickster fool, which I mean, and you do identify, presumably, right, with the liberating trickster, spicy satirist who takes on tyranny. That's your team, right? Yeah.
I aspire to be, but, you know, they're much more dignified and good people than me.
No. We need everybody. We need everybody. We want your because you can you know even if in your spicy George Carlin like thing, and you know, may he be praised, although a little mean. But you know, the word charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable and Eucharist and Cordelia, and dedicated heart.
And I'm so sorry that I have to run. But if it's ever possible to come back, I'd love to join you again.
Okay, that's adorable. All right, we're grateful for whatever you got. Okay, thank you. More soon,
thank
later.
You so much.
Thank you for your work. God bless you. I'll carry on somehow. Okay, that's great. All right, and off he goes. He comes and he goes. All right, so, and here we are back here. Team, wonderful. Again, thanks to, I'm reaching. We can use a little poor people. Thanks to Keith. Oh, thank you. Bless your heart, Keith, in Alameda, California. The book and the host sound great. Yes, excellent. And Steve, who says, I like your show, from Novato. Thank you, team. So we want to magnetize more. This is a particularly dangerous and thus auspicious time to contribute. You know, again, we strengthen whatever we spend our money on is the phrase. That's the truth. Or we worship. We worship whatever we spend our money on. So this is a pledge for community, for truthfulness, for spiciness, for all of us being vulgar comedians, making fun of hypocrites, but setting everything free, setting everything free. Everybody gets a metaphoric gift bag as well, a bag of liberating lightning to throw at any closed circle, to turn it into a spiral. And we can turn it on ourselves as well. Changing of mind. Changing of mind is really a available and a crucial good thing. And that's part of the poignancy of Charlie Kirk, is he was beginning to change his mind a month and weeks before his assassination. He was like, Epstein files must be released, no matter who's on them. Epstein files. dodgy for him to be disobedient. Also, Israel's great, of course, but no, no, not this Israel, not Netanyahu, no. You know, October 7th was, you know, Netanyahu had advanced intelligence, you know, all kinds. Netanyahu, well, a whole bunch of people meet with Charlie Kirk in the basement of the White House, or I can't remember, just going, no, you must come back into line, you know, and Netanyahu offered him $180 million if he would just, you know, be quiet about that and support Israel without criticism, and he wouldn't. And he said he was frightened of, Charlie Kirk said he was frightened of Israel. Not that anything need literally be true. It is certainly a sketchy time out there, a very sketchy time out there. And all solace, again, to his widow, Erica, a Scorpio Aries woman. You know, that people are talking about as a potential VP, and we go, no, 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 let's throw that into the cauldron. There we go. And the way you get to throw it into the cauldron is by pledging. There you go. That's one way. 1-800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. I'm particularly focused, really, on Separation of Church and Hate by John Fugelsang. Really, really useful handbook strategy, because it doesn't require believing, being a Christian, being not a Christian. It doesn't require any of that. It's just gotta know. Jesus is a teammate for sure, you know, and did you know? So again, 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Pledge of $150 for Separation of Church and Hate. But really, everything, completely anything, $5, $500, 3 cents, all is completely welcome. It's part of feeding our community network, our mycelia, whereby to get, you know, to convene, to gather, to get truth out, that we may be spicy people, absolutely. And also, So the insane, you know, response by the right to Charlie Kirk's death, which we celebrate no death, right? But they're making his birthday, October 14th, a national holiday. Well, team, that's my birthday too, right? So Charlie Kirk, me, George Floyd, Hannah Arendt, and Ike Eisenhower, all October 14th. I think we should celebrate many other people than Charlie Kirk, and say to him, you know, on his way out, you know, maybe changing his mind, could have maybe changed his mind more. You know, good luck, lad. You know, maybe on his way out, he's going, I sort of blew it. I just, better luck next time. Whew. So here we are. And then, you know, we want to fill ourselves with well, I like October 14th being Hannah Arendt Day. You know, we'll see if we have time to bring up some quotes. Desire, magnetize more people filling up the coffers over here for the Visionary Activist Show and for KPFA by calling 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Online would be wonderful. You can see lots of thank you gifts, lots of possible things that you can do. But it's crucial, you know, Hannah Arendt, it's crucial to support the thing. Let me just do Hannah Arendt. I've always known that Hannah Arendt and I shared a birthday, which is sort of like, oh, well, yes, okay, I aspire. Storytelling reveals meaning without committing the error of defining it, says Hannah. Well, thank you. The sad truth is that most evil is done by people who never make up their minds to be good or evil. Right, it's a dedicated time. It's a dedicated time. You know, we find other October 14ths to honor and celebrate, and we do yearn for you, calling to pledge on behalf of yourself and on behalf of those who can't. We have a really wonderful, diverse listening audience. People in prison listen to this show. Homeless people on the street listen to this show. People tell me their dog really likes the show. So call on behalf of those who cannot, right? That's part of our mutual aid, part of the Act 5 that we're all moving towards. 800-439-5732. Your dog wants you to do this. And your cat, possibly too. Or kpfa.org. So there we go. So we'll do a little more Hannah Arendt. Well, no, I know if you're very good, we're gonna play a short clip because it's so wonderful. It was so wonderful from last week. And people kept asking for a recording of it. Here we go. And it's B Dubba the artist on Instagram. But it's so useful for all of us. We're picking up skills. Here's Reframe.
Don't say I'm stressed. Say my body is preparing me to rise from this challenge. This reframes stress into energy, turning cortisol into courage. Don't say I have to do this. Say I get to do this. This shifts the brain from pressure to gratitude, increasing motivation. Don't say I'll try. Say I commit. Try signals doubt, but commit programs the subconscious for a follow through. Don't say I'm bad at this. Say, I'm still learning this. Your brain loves growth. This rewires failure into progress. Don't say, I don't have time. Say, it's not my priority. This brutal truth exposes what you truly value. Don't say, that's just who I am. Say, that's who I've been, but not who I must stay. Identity is flexible. This creates mental freedom. Don't say, this always happens to me. Say, what can I learn from it this time? This stops victimhood and activates problem-solving mode. Don't say I don't know. Say I don't know yet. This adds growth mindset, tricking the brain to search for answers. Don't say I'm nervous. Say I'm excited. The brain cannot tell the difference. You control the framing. Don't say it's impossible. Say it hasn't been done by me yet. This opens possibility and dissolves mental barriers. Don't say I can't do this. Say how can I do this? Asking questions activates problem-solving circuits. Don't say I failed. Say I've discovered one way it doesn't work. This resets failure into data. Don't say I'm stuck. Say I'm pausing to reset. This turns paralysis into preparation, reducing anxiety. Don't say they lucky. Say they created opportunities. This shifts envy into responsibility and empowerment. Don't say I wish, say I will. Wish signals helplessness. Will directs action. Don't say I'm overwhelmed. Say I'm prioritizing. This gives the mind order instead of chaos. Don't say this is hard. Say this is stretching me. This frames difficulty as growth, not as punishment. Don't say I don't belong here. Say I'm learning to belong here. This destroys imposter syndrome with progression language. Don't say why me, say why not me. This turns suffering into strength, unlocking resilience. Do not say I've lost everything. Say now I have the space to build better. This transforms despair into renewal, psychology of rebirth. So just keep that in mind.
So just keep that in mind. Thank you, B. Dubba, the artist on Instagram. Wonderful, wonderful. Had to replay that because it's so rich. Again, no sense bespelling ourselves, team. Language is one of the great initial technologies of participation. You know, the dream news. We're dreaming up the news. We're fully aware of the danger of the actual news, but we're, again, honing our language craft. That's wonderful. Thank you, team. Thank you, Anonymous. Again, woof, woof, wink, wink. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Robert in American Canyon, California. Pledge to separation for separation of church and hate, A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the Bible from Fundamentalist Fascists and Flock-Fleecing Frauds by John Fugelson. Yeah, and Robert says, Jesus taught Christians to love, not hate. Absolutely. Thank you. And we would love many more to join the team here again to be able to inhale wealth and spiral it forth into the community, always, by calling 800-439-5732 or pledging online, kpfa.org. Really great. Primarily enthused by the book Separation of Church and Hate for a pledge of $150, because it's so it's part of how we want to prepare. This is really a trickster training radio show to get all of our skills, our participatory skills, our eloquent skills, you know, toned up to be able to, again, be agents of cooling out the conflagration as such a crucial thing. So it would be so grand to call 800-439-5732 or pledge online, kpfa.org. That would be super, super wonderful, because you'll be so informed. I mean, we know this, but everything horrific before us in its most grotesque and cruel form started a long, long time ago. You know, in biblical scholars and, again, separation of church and hate, you will find out how full of teen sex trafficking the Old Testament is. You know, all these stories we grew up with, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, the two messenger angels come to Sodom and the town wants to gang rape them. And Lot says, no, don't rape them. Here's my two teenage daughters. You gang rape them. This is all in the Bible. There's a lot of that, you know, and it's like, whoosh, this all started long ago. And so to hold anyone who presumes to derive status from Christianity or the teachings of Jesus, hold them to it. Did you know about this? By calling 800-439-5732 or pledging online at kpfa.org. That would be good. We only have a few more minutes left. We want to look like grown-ups here. We want to be grown-ups. We want to be disciplined, wild people and spicy, mature people. Here we are. And so in magnetizing to pledge on behalf of those who cannot. Yeah, and you will know, you know, what a true feminist Jesus really was. Always talking across borders, always dissolving the taboos of outcast, embracing all. It's really worth having in your repertoire to talk to anybody. And without needing to be a Christian, I mean, Jung said, I'm glad I'm Jung and not a Jungian, or truly, but to embrace everything that's good, because everything horrific about humanity is now embodied and active, and we seem to have outsourced our authority to these grotesque monstrosities of cruelty and creepitude. So right now, really, by calling, imagine this, we're inhaling our complicity from anything up to no good and exhaling it into the much better guiding story that invites the best of everyone to participate, not the least. As we look at, you know, uninitiated Mars as a difficult thing, really, again, we want to initiate. You go, Caroline, says Catherine in Berkeley. Thank you very much. Yes, I will. And you go, too. This show, everybody who pledges, well, the show loves you. And everybody listening, show loves you. Let's go out with something fun and big here, a flurry. 800-439-5732. 800-439-5732. Yes. Oh, somebody coming in here. That's good. Okay, wonderful. KPFA.org. Yay, team. Thanks always to Radha Keel, Skookum Board Up. And remember, may we all be Skookum connected to the spirits and completely competent for the work at hand. Much to do, team, to gather all of our skills. Here we go. 800-439-5732. Woof. There we go. I think we're going out. Maybe not. No, you can still call. Call 800-439-5732 or at pledging online, kpfa.org. Oh, that's great. Delia, thank you. God bless you. You put us into the financially sane realm. Delia in Albany, California, Separation of Church and Hate, A Sane Person's Guide to Taking Back the Bible from Fundamentalist Fascists and Flock Fleecing Frauds by John Fugelsang. Really excellent. Again, you can join all these wonderful people by calling 800-439-5732. Reciprocal blessing. Thank you, team. We will reconvene next week. Woof, 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 woof.